My name's Paul. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Paul.
I'm a member of the East Naples Men's Group. And I have a service commitment at the old timers meeting on Saturday night because they needed a GSR and I didn't want to do it, so I volunteered it. I volunteered because I was taught just do all the stuff you don't want to do and you'll be okay. So I do that today. But most of the stuff I like to do today. My sobriety date's April 17th, 1985. Wow. I haven't found it necessary to take a drink since then. I didn't have continuous sobriety when I first came around. I was just here kicking tires. I was looking for the easier, softer way. I was looking for a girlfriend with a house and a car. Yeah, actually I did. More than once. Man, I'll tell you what, it's great to be in this room tonight. At the end of the meeting, we're going to have a moment of silence, and I'm going to ask you two favors. I want you to keep Russell Spatz in your prayers, because he's a little bit under the weather. And a guy like Russell only comes around once in a while to do the service he does with his message. We're so fortunate to have a guy like that in Alcoholics Anonymous. He goes any lengths, travels all over the country doing meetings and step series. And he's the wrench for most of us nuts, that's for sure. And also, I was wondering if they had, so we want to have a prayer for Russell. And I was wondering today if they had meetings in Kiev. So I looked it up. Tonight at 7 o'clock, the name of the group in Ukraine is a spiritual awakening group. Start at 7 o'clock. So I ask that you'll keep the Alkies in both countries over there, prayers for them. To go through what they're going through and not pick up a drink would indeed be miraculous. So we just want to send out some prayers and good thoughts for those people. I went to my first meeting. I took up my first drink when I was 13 years old in Miami Shores. And I had my last drink in New Orleans when I was 33 years old. I say that to qualify, to show you that I do belong here. I went to my first meeting in New Orleans. I didn't identify, I didn't stay. I love the people that brought me there. There were people that, I was running a nightclub and they bought non-conference approved white material from me and they paid up front and they shared, you know? So when you've got clients like that paying up front and sharing, you love those people. And I love these people. And she was attractive and he was a rough-nosed Italian. But they drank where I worked. They were good tippers. And that's all I knew about people. That's all I could identify with, was how you treated me and how, if you acted like me. And Liz goes away one day to the home for the nervous. Today they call them treatment centers. Liz destroyed everything in the apartment in some kind of psychosis. So they take Liz away to the home for the nervous. I'm concerned about Liz because I like Liz. I know nothing about drug addiction and alcohol. The only problem I have with drug addiction and alcohol, it's a problem when I can't get it. But I worked in a bar, so I didn't have many problems with that. And I ran into Liz one day at a barbecue. And I see her coming. I said, Liz, how you doing? I'm concerned about Liz. Now I got one foot in the grave. I'm killing myself a day at a time, but I don't know it. And Liz says something totally foreign to me. She says, Paul, I'm doing great. So I found this program that teaches me I don't have to use drugs and alcohol anymore. And I said, man, Liz, what a drag that must be, huh? I felt like I should have been in that meeting in Ukraine. I didn't understand that at all. But there was a certain look in Liz's eyes that was something different. The sick and suffering that I was, I saw it. And a couple of weeks later, they brought me to my first meeting that contempt prior investigation. Anybody in this room ever have contempt prior investigation?
No.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm in that meeting. I'm reading all the 12 steps and working them right there, 30 seconds, and I know this ain't going to work for me.
Get your hands off.
I know there's people, the people I see in the meeting, I don't really care for them because I've kicked them out of that nightclub I'm running. And I don't stay very long. And eventually I work my way back here. So, Russ would normally be on the 12th step tonight, we think. And the 12th step reads, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Now, that's kind of a tough order, but because I've worked the first 11 steps, I've had a spiritual awakening. I try to practice the principles behind all of the steps, and then our duty is to carry this message to the next person God puts in front of us. And you see it in this room. This room is full of people that are involved in service. Jimmy's coming here every Tuesday night for 30 years, making sure this meeting's going. Nancy's here quite often, putting the decorations around the room. Sheldon comes here and sets up the Zoom for Russ. Andrew, Don. These are people that are carrying a message. These are people that are in the midst of a spiritual awakening through service. A profound personality change. You know, in the back of the book, it talks about a spiritual experience, spiritual awakening. The term spiritual experience and spiritual awakening I use many times in this book, which upon careful reading shows that the personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism has manifested itself in many different forms. Now, when they wrote the book, this wasn't in the first edition. This wasn't added till 1950, because alcoholics around the world started writing general service because Bill had a white light experience, and people weren't having that white light experience, and they were wondering if they were doing it right. So they wrote this chapter to show that mine's more of the personality change, like I would imagine a lot of the people in here. But I don't understand I'm having it while I'm going through it. Now, I know there are people in it that have had white-like experiences. I sponsor one that had one. And they can never explain it to you. They just know they had it. I didn't have that. Mine was when I meet Tony and Liz, and they bring me to my first meeting. Mine was it began for me when I put my hand on the first door of the AA room I went into. Mine was when I picked up my last white chip. Mine was when someone offered me a drink for the first time, I said no. And I understood the question. And I said no. Mine began when someone gave me change for a 20 and I had given them a 10. I said, no, that's the wrong change. Now, we don't understand what's going on within us when we're going through this stuff, but if you keep coming back here it's promised, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, to try to carry this message and practice these principles. There's a power in these rooms. There's a power in each and every one of us. The book tells us, deep down inside of us, there's a power. There's God within us. So I had to start working on finding that God within me. I had to really know that I was powerless over alcohol. My life was unbearable. My last drunk took away all the reservations I needed. My relapse, missed a plane leaving New Orleans twice. So I end up in a cab outside Fort Lauderdale Airport. And cab driver says, where you been? I said, I've been in New Orleans. I've been partying all weekend. And he says, I don't drink anymore. And that whole ride on the plane back, I'm thinking, am I going to pick up a white chip? I got that ping pong match, you know, that reservation. You're going to pick up a chip? You're going to make a commitment? You're going to try and roll the dice and get away with this again. In the back of our coin, it says, to thy own self be true. So I tell the cab driver, I said, man, I've been on a relapse all weekend. I said, how do you not drink? He says, I go to AA meetings. Of all the cabs I watch go by and I end up in this guy's cab, a little awakening in my spirit. Damn right. I should have had a white light experience there. And I tell him, and he takes me home. We put my suitcase away, and he brings me to a meeting on Wednesday, April 17th. And that's when I picked up my last white chip. That's when I conceived to my innermost self. So my mind is gradual. And I don't know when I'm going through it, but I know when I'm going backwards. Upon careful reading shows that personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism has manifested itself in many different forms. So those are a few of my forms. There's many more. Yet it's true in our first printing gave many readers the impression that their personality changes or religious experience must be of the nature of a sudden and spectacular upheavals. Bill gets on his knees and says, you know, if you're out there, God, reveal yourself to me. And the whole room lights up and the breeze comes through it. So that's what they thought it was going to happen to them, what happened to Bill. But it wasn't. They weren't sure if they were doing it right. So that's when they put this in. Happily for everyone, this conclusion is erroneous. In the first few chapters, a number of sudden revolutionary changes are described. Bill's story, Abby comes and talks to Bill. Dr. Jung tells Roland, you need a deep and effective spiritual experience if you want to recover. He asks, is there any hope for me? He says, yes. We must change our ideas, our emotions, and our attitudes. If you came here tonight, that's a change in your ideas, in your emotions, in your attitudes. It's going on for you, like it's going on for me. It's happening. You're in the midst of it. Enjoy it. God's doing for us what we can't do for ourselves. In my case, absolutely. I kind of understood that I belonged here. And then I started to plug in. So the next part of my spiritual experience is I want to drink on that Friday after picking up that white chip. And I go to a meeting for the first time ever. I'm going to plug into a group that I'm at and say, I feel like drinking today. I rat on the disease, I tell on it. Totally foreign to anything I had ever done before. You know, I'm thinking, oh, easy does it, this too shall pass. And then you leave romance in the drink, and before you know it, you're thinking about drinking. But I did something totally against my nature. I humbly raised my hand and said, I feel like drinking today. Because I knew I was an alcoholic and I didn't want to drink. And a group came around me and I started using that group as the power greater than myself. So there's a power in these rooms. Whether you know what it is or not, look around you. People ain't drinking here. Try to hold on to that if you knew. Nobody's drinking. Anybody thinking about drinking? It's okay if you are. Look at that. Room full of alkies. Nobody's thinking about drinking. Some of them are full of shit, I know that. I understand. I was like that too, man. I couldn't tell the truth for 10 years. So I tell the group and they come around me and I start using them. And what it did for me is it made it much easier for me to tell on my disease every other time. Among our rapidly growing membership of thousands, such transformations, though frequent, are by no means the rule. Most of our experience are what the psychologist William James calls the educational variety, because they develop slowly over a period of time. That's my story. Quite often, friends of the newcomer are aware of the difference long before he is himself. He finally realizes he has gone a profound alteration in his reaction to life, that such a change could hardly have been brought about by himself alone. I can never do any of this stuff on my own. The grace of God has entered into me through you people at meetings like this to show me that you don't have to drink today and you can have a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. That there's a power here, the we part of Alcoholics Anonymous. Together, we have the power to stay away from a drink. Hmm. So I come to believe I start using the group that was slowly restoring me to sanity. I'm coming up on 90 days, and I'm going to, the code for I want to drink starts swirling in my mind. All my relapses were in New Orleans. And I'm thinking, my oldest daughter lives there. I'm thinking, hey, I should go see how Julie's doing, which, you know, that's code I want to drink. I want to go see how my friends in the bars are doing. I hung out with nothing but musicians and other bar people and people I played golf with. And when I would see them, I'm comparing my insides to their outsides. They look like they're having a good time. Very common for people like us to never be contented on the inside. You know, if I had this girl, if I had that car, if I had this job, this amount of money, my life would be okay. And the book tells us the only way we're going to get that stuff is we put spiritual needs first. Never before. You want a good job? Have a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. You want a good relationship? Put the first 11 proposals into your life and the principles before them. And it can happen for you. I promise you. We find a new freedom and a new happiness here. Even on our bad days, even on our worst days, we see people go through horrific stuff and they don't drink. God makes that possible. God is the one who has all power. May you find him now. Deep down inside of us, he's living. What I have to do is continue to search for him and connect with him on a daily basis. So on this first page on 567, change, change, upheavals, change, change, such transformation, the educational variety that develop slowly over a period of time, profound alteration, change. And what that brings me to is a God consciousness that I need him. I need him in all my affairs, not what I want to pick and choose. Because when I pick and choose, I'm screwed. I've been picking bad since I was a kid. So that's why I got to have a home group and I got to have a sponsor and I got to participate in that home group. And I got to really find out what Alcoholics Anonymous is about. So I use the group and then I make a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God, my Father. Our Father. I use the Lord's Prayer. The God within me. How I'm going to connect with the God in you. And then I start reading the book. Because that's what the book tells me. If you honestly, when you honestly want to and you find you cannot quit entirely, or when if drinking you have little control over the amount you take, you're probably alcoholic. If that be the case, you may be suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience will conquer. Lack of power, that was our dilemma. We had to find a power by which we could live. It had to be a power greater than ourselves. Obviously, but where do we find that power? Well, that's what this book is about. It tells us right here. Well, that's exactly what this book is about. Its main object is to enable you to find a power greater than ourselves to solve your problem. At this time I'm reading this, it's the drink problem. But as I continue in the steps, and I find out that I'm consumed with defects of character and shortcomings, I know that's hard to believe, looking at this angelic face. I'm consumed with them. The booze is just but a symptom. My selfishness, my self-centeredness, my pride, ego, image. It's all on page 48 in the 12 and 12. Seven deadly sins. If you're struggling in some area of your life, please look at those. Read this book. Most important sentence is the shortest sentence in this book, top of 112. Read this book. Because this is where I start to find a power greater than myself, based on the story, Bill's story, from We Agnostics. The whole first four chapters are talking to me about my alcoholism. I can see it, I can feel it, I can understand it. On page 47, it asks once, this is my second step question. Do I now believe or am I willing to believe there's a power greater than myself? I see it. I see it in this room working with you people. I see it as a power. Nobody's drinking here. I can see that. I can feel it. So what am I gonna do now? I get on my knees, I say a prayer. Relieve me of the bondage of self. Show me how to do this. Show me the way, Lord. And I go on and I pick up a pen. And for the first time, I do a fearless and moral, honest inventory of my fears, my resentments, my harms done other. And I gotta look at this shit, because this is me. This is me on this paper, and I got to own up to it. And I don't feel good about that. I had a little, something came up on Facebook this week, something that brought back a lousy memory for me. One of my girlfriends, the one that put up with the worst part of my drug addiction, alcoholism, she got married, a beautiful picture of her on Facebook, and I was happy for her. But this was the kind of guy I was when I was dating her. I'm the kind of guy that goes out for the roast beef sandwich and comes back 2 days later. I got the sandwich. But that's the kind of inconsiderate guy I am. Unfortunately, she gets pregnant. We got to go have an abortion. 2 weeks later, I ask her for half the money back. Yeah. That's pretty sad, right? But that's how selfish and self-centered I was. I didn't give a shit about her. I needed the money to buy some dope. What I put her through. To be where I was, to be sitting up here tonight, coming up on 37 years, quite amazing. Only through the grace of God, people like you in meetings like this, I'm able to show you what God can do for us. Doesn't matter. Our deep, dark past becomes our greatest asset. So if you're dealing with some lousy shit you did, write it down, share it with somebody, and move on. The book says we do this quickly. And then we really get to the exact nature, the defects and the shortcomings, the things that keep me separated from you, keep me separated from God. They're on that paper. I'm going to share it to another person. The end of my isolation. Anybody in here holding on to secrets tonight? Yeah, okay, Richard, beautiful. Oh, there's only one. There's a saying in here that we're only as sick as our secrets, man, and that is my experience. I held on to secrets my first 10 years in recovery. I was borrowing my boss's money. He didn't know it. It's called embezzlement. And I had to deal with that, and I had to go to him and tell him what I was doing. And once again, what it was, I had no faith. I had no trust. I didn't trust God. I started running my own show, lying to myself every single day. I'll put it back. I'll do this. I'll do that. Just horseshit. Until I surrendered to that part of my disease. And I went and talked to him. And we set up this payment plan. And I worked my way out of that. And he very easily could have fired me. But he was one of us. And he understood how nuts I was. But he also saw a lot of good qualities in me. And he gave me a break more than once. My resentment to him, he cheated me out of $500 in a deal one day. And that's how I dealt with it. Instead of talking to him man on man, because God gave me brains to use, I should go talk to him about this. Not me. I was enjoying that resentment. Sick. Suffering. But God brought me to my knees in that area of my life with those defects of character. That's part of my awakening in the spirit. I can't live that way anymore. So if you're struggling with some tonight, please get it off your chest. Because that's the kind of stuff that takes us out the door. Secrets. Try to let go and find some faith and trust in God as you understand them. Talk about it. Write it down. You know, and then we become willing to let that stuff go. And we humbly ask him. And then we make a list and we start making amends. We humbly ask God to remove my shortcomings. Humbly. When they first write the book, it's only two paragraphs on 6 and 7, but 15 years later, Bill has a lot more direction and understanding about alcoholism and his own life and his own recovery. You know, he's sponsoring half the people in Alcoholics Anonymous, starting meetings all over the place. And this is an important paragraph that I've been reading lately. It's the last paragraph in step 7 in the 12 and 12. Step 7 is where we make the change in our attitude, which permits us with humility as our guide to move out from ourselves and towards others and towards God. The whole emphasis on step 7 is humility. It is really saying to us what we now ought to be willing to try: humility in seeking the removal of our shortcomings, just as we did with alcohol. I asked God to take away the obsession of drink, and it went. Now I got to turn the money and the relationships and the job and the stuff that people like us deal with every day. I got to humbly ask him to direct my thinking in those areas. And you know what? When we invite a loving God into our lives, he'll take care of it. The quicker I can surrender, the better I am. Please, surrender quickly. Identify the problem. Humbly ask him. Be willing to try in seeking the removal of other shortcomings, just as we, when we admitted we were powerless over alcohol and came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. If that degree of humility could enable us to find the grace by which such a deadly obsession could be banished, then there must be hope. The same result respecting any other problem we could possibly have. So we try to live a turnover life, and we try to do it quickly. And then I go on and I make my eighth step, my ninth step, and I have a daily routine that I take my own inventory most of the time. Believe me, some of you are in it quite often. But I'm aware of it. A book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize that we know only a little. God will continually disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who's still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit in something you haven't got. See to that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you, countless others. That is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of the past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and we'll surely meet you, some of us, as you trudge the road to happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. So the other thing I want to close with is this pamphlet here. A member's eye view of Alcoholics Anonymous. Best kept secret in Alcoholics Anonymous is a literature. This guy, I always look for the slender threads on how God puts people in our lives that kind of give us a message. So this guy, his name is Al McGee, and he's going to speak to a group at UCLA. He's going to give a talk on, he's talking to people that are going to be doctors and therapists training in the field of addictions. And Al goes and he has dinner the night before with this guy by the name of Beard P. And Beard is a trustee at General Service in New York. And he said, hey, what are you doing out here? And he says, well, I'm going to give this presentation. And he says, well, you know, he says, hey, can I read that? He says, yeah, sure. And he reads it, and the slender thread is Beard really likes that, and he sees something in it. So he brings it back to New York. And that's how this pamphlet's getting written. A slender thread. Those guys don't have dinner together. He doesn't read this. We might not have this. This is the pretty cool part in here. Should this hard-won understanding of and feeling for others could be confined to the meeting halls and members of AA? He's talking about the people that are sitting around him, people that normally wouldn't mix. Catholics, Americans, Frenchmen, Mexicans, Jews, Muslims, Hindus, black and brown people. I'm aware that I'm only sitting next to an alcoholic. That's pretty good that we try not to see color in this room, that we try to really try to help each other. The book says we got to lay aside all prejudice. Can I there in the household of God know what I am sitting next to, another white man, another Catholic, another American, nor a Frenchman, Mexican, Jew, Hindu, black, or brown, not even another alcoholic? And I can finally at long let please God, come home from all the wars and say our very depths of my soul, I'm sitting next to another human being. Ladies and gentlemen, we would dare to attempt to analyze a phenomenon, a diagram, a wonder, a miracle. The answer is only a fool. And I trust that tonight I have been such a fool. I have tried to do is tell you where I have been for the past 16 years. Some things I have come to believe because of my journeys. This coming Sunday in churches, many of us, it will be read a portion of the Gospel of Matthew, which recounts the time when John the Baptist was languishing in the prison of Herod and hearing of the works of his cousin Jesus. He sent two disciples to say to him, "Art thou he who has come to, or shall we look for another?" He wants to know, are you the Messiah? Jesus don't answer him. And Christ did as he so often did, does not answer them directly. But he wanted John to decide. And so he said to the disciples, "Go back and report to John what you heard and what you have seen. The blind can see, the lame can walk, the lepers are cleansed, the deaf hear, the dead rise, the poor have the gospel to preach to them. Back in my childhood catechism days, I was taught that the poor, in this instance, did not mean only poor in material sense, but it also meant poor in spirit." How was your spirit when you showed up here?
Okay.
Huh? Pretty bad?
Yeah.
Poor in spirit. I was taught, but it also meant those who burned with an inner hunger and inner thirst. Man, I wanted to stop drinking and using, I just didn't know how. I had that something going on. I had turned into the person I said I would never be. And that the word gospel meant quite literally the good news. More than 16 years ago, four men, my boss, my physician, my pastor, and the one friend I had left, working together, maneuvered me to an AA meeting. Tonight, if I were to ask, "Tell us, what did you find at that first meeting?" I would say to them what I now say to you. I can tell you only what I have heard and seen. It seems that the blind do see, the lame do walk, the lepers are cleansed, the deaf hear, the dead rise. Over and over again, in the middle of the longest days and the darkest nights, all poor in spirit had the good news told to them. God grant it always be that way. So here's the good news for people like us. It works. It really does. Thank you very
Amen.
Much.